नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
This morning from Canto 3, Chapter 21, Texts 48, 49, and 50. The previous verses summarized are following the benediction of the Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, upon Kartika Muni, that his desires would be fulfilled, he would achieve perfection in spiritual life, the Supreme Lord would become his son, and his wife would be Devahuti, the daughter of Swayambhu Manu and Shatarupa. The Lord left. Kardama watched him depart, descending to the Vaikuntha realm, thrilled at having the audience of the Lord and waiting to fulfill the instructions that he had been given. Swayambhu Manu, just as the Lord said 2 days later, is approaching the hermitage of Kardama, deep in the forest, early in the Satyayuga. And the description of the forest is provided. And the forest animals and birds and sounds and the pleasant atmosphere. What Swayambhu Manu saw as he approached the hermitage, the appearance of Kardama, specifically it says that he appeared like a gem that's not yet polished, so the illumination or the light radiating from the gem could be seen, but the outside was not refined. So he was dressed in rags and matted locks and not emaciated, although he had been performing austerities for a long time in the forest, because the personality Godhead had, by his presence, had, he was killed in that way, not by eating a lot. He had heard the nectar flowing from the moon-like words of the Lord, and that was why he wasn't emaciated looking. So, text 48. Seeing that the monarch had come to his hermitage and was bowing before him, the sage greeted him with benediction and received him with due honor. Report. Emperor Swayambhu Manu not only approached the cottage of dried leaves possessed by the hermit Kardama, but also offered respectful obeisances unto him. Similarly, it was the duty of the hermit to offer blessings to the king, the kings who used to approach his hermitage in the jungle. Text 49. After receiving the sage's attention, the king sat down and was silent. Recalling the instructions of the Lord, Kardama then spoke to the king as follows, delighting him with his sweet accents. Accents, gira, is slakshnya, slakshnaya gira, his sweet voice. 50. The tour you have undertaken, O Lord, is surely intended to protect the virtuous and kill the demons, since you embody the protecting energy of Sri Hari. The Sanskrit word is Palani, Palana Shakti or Palani. Purport. It appears from many Vedic literatures, especially histories like Srimad Bhagavatam and the Puranas, that the pious kings of old used to tour their kingdoms in order to give protection to the pious citizens and to chastise or kill the impious. Sometimes they used to kill animals in the forests to practice the art of killing, because without such practice they would not be able to kill the undesirable elements. Kshatriyas are allowed to commit violence in that way because violence for a good purpose is part of their duty. Here, two terms are clearly mentioned. Vadhaya, vadhaya, or for the purpose of killing, and asatam, quote, those who are undesirable. The protecting energy of the king is supposed to be the energy of the Supreme Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 4.8, the Lord says, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya shaduskritam. The Lord descends to give protection to the pious and kill the demons. The potency, therefore, to give protection to the pious and kill the demons or undesirables is directly an energy from the Supreme Lord, and the king, or the chief executive of the state, is supposed to possess such energy. In this age, it is very difficult to find such a head of state who is expert in killing the undesirables. Modern heads of state sit very nicely in their palaces and try without reason to kill innocent persons. So we're getting some cultural points, the relationship between a Kshatriya and a Brahmana, social points, duties of a Kshatriya, and how respect amongst elevated persons is exhibited. So there are duties of a Brahmana and there's duties of a Kshatriya in relation to in their dealings with one another. It's good for a Kshatriya to approach qualified Brahmanas and be humble, because be humble and exhibit humility and offer respect, because the tendency of one who has power is to become enamored with the power and to forget from whom the power is derived and for what purpose the power is to be utilized. So in the social body, the Brahmanas are for that function. They're the mouthpiece of the Supreme Lord. They speak on behalf of the Supreme Lord. And because of that, all the members of society are to honor such a qualified person. And it starts with the king. If the king doesn't, how is everyone else going to? And everything goes down. If there aren't qualified Brahmanas and if kings don't offer proper respect to the qualified Brahmanas. And that's the way of the age of Kali. It's both. There aren't qualified Brahmanas, and those that are in administrative positions commonly, while there may be some external show, it's not the kind of submission that Swayamrupa Madhava is exhibiting. and this is like the ideal, and then you go down from there. So he's the emperor of the world, and he's gone into the forest purposefully to see a sage, and he's prostrated himself before the sage. Bowing down. Materialists don't like to bow down. It's a sign of weakness and other kinds of deprecatory visions of submitting oneself in a humble way before another person. They don't like it. It's weird for them. And the Vaishnava culture is natural. Not only should a Kshatriya offer his respect to a Brahmana, that's one cultural position. The instruction that Prabhupada gave for his followers is whenever you see a Vaishnava, commonly the setting was when there are temples. So in the morning, when you see a particular Vaishnava, or any of the members of the Vaishnava community, the first is you see them first in the morning, offer obeisances. That's culture. Vaishnava culture. It started with offering obeisances to sannyasis. When devotees began taking sannyas, Prabhupada instructed we should offer our obeisances to sannyasis. Then I remember very specifically visiting Mayapur during our Mayapur Vrindavan festival periods in 1974 and 1975. I don't know where he came from or where he was staying, but there was a Mayavadi sannyasi who would come every day. And, you know, from the gate, walk to the temple, see the deity, darshan of the deity, and then leave. So the devotees asked Prabhupada, should we offer, what should we do? He's a sannyasi. Should we offer respect? But he's a Mayavadi. And Prabhupada said, we should offer your respect as is due to a sannyasi. You don't hear from him, but you offer him respect for that position of renunciation. It's a cultural etiquette item. And the Vaishnava principle is we don't hear from my buddies. We'll be respectful in a formal way. And you could say conversely, the opposite is criticism would go to the members of our society for not offering respects to a renunciate. So the formality is one thing, and then the inner submission, particularly in the form of hearing, is another thing. In this case, Swayambhu Manu understood the cardinal, and he wasn't a Mayavadi, and he wasn't an ordinary person. So his offering respect was very genuine. And on the other side, the Brahmana, Karma, explicitly stated his duty was to offer blessings. Similarly, it was the duty of the hermit to offer blessings to kings who used to approach his hermitage in the jungle. So not haughty or proud and arrogant, saying, you worldly person. Yeah. But gentle and respectful, and because here's a person who's giving protection to the whole of the world, or his citizens of his kingdom. That's a great service. So may you carry out your service nicely. We don't know what he said, offering his benedictions. And although he's a hermit living in the forest, still the etiquette is there, even for someone who's
possessions are minimal, negligible. These three things are part of the social etiquette that Prabhupada has trained us. When someone comes, this is particularly for householders, but for anyone, someone comes, three things: a place to sit, some water to drink, or some refreshment like that, and some kind words. So the king was offered a seat. It's interesting that to allow the etiquette to happen, he remained silent. He's come off this distance, and he's paying obeisances and then remaining silent. Not like you can't say anything because then you're breaking some rule. It says, describe what he did. Gives me the language in the translation is, after receiving the king's attention, so he offered his respect to the sage. The sage is now acknowledging, in other words, he wasn't in some trance of meditation, he's acknowledging the king has come. Peacefully he sat. Karma then begins to speak. And he's going to speak, specifically it says, recalling the instructions of the Lord. When a Brahmana or a Vaishnava speaks, before speaking, thought goes to their instructions they have received, the teachings they've understood, their place of shelter is taken before speaking, so that one is directed properly by Super Soul and by those who have guided them and trained them and educated them in spiritual life. Thought goes there. And then he began to speak. So, again, another cultural point is a duty of the king. And the duty of the king was not just to sit in his palace and enjoy life. I forget where we were. Oh, it was in Los Angeles, and some gathering, some meeting that we had in Los Angeles at the end of May, after the Dinagari retreat. Went to Los Angeles for a meeting, an organization development meeting, and one devotee came from the UK named Pradosh. And during lunch he was describing, because somebody had asked him something, he was describing the life of King Henry VIII. And he explained it's very clearly, graphically taught in their history classes in Great Britain. What a debauchee Henry VIII was. How many wives he had, his interest in having a son, and the first wife didn't have a son, so he killed her. And the second wife was, through some other kingdom. So when she was unable to bear a son, he rejected her because you can't kill her, you didn't have a war. And then he married another one and killed her because she didn't have a son. So many wives he had, ultimately never had a son, except through one of the servants had a son from him. And, really degraded character. So many palaces, and anyway, without all the detail. No wonder the people became disgusted with the functioning of a king, because the functioning of a king, the respect that goes to the king in Vedic culture, was he's the representative of God. And as the representative of God, he knows God's will. he knows God's will from his training as a qualified king, and also from the guidance of qualified Brahmins. And the strength of the king is also invested by God with ruling potency, Palana Shakti. But then kings, qualified kings, know how to use and how not to use. Big issue in Mahabharata or other literatures where the just use of strength. It's in Ramayana also. You know, there's rules before there's combat, there's some essential principles that are to be in place before before prowess is deployed for a qualified king, a qualified kshatriya. Not just ruthlessness or brutishness or other kinds of modern abuses. So the point is made that kings would travel throughout their kingdom and do these two things. Just the same as the purpose of Krishna's appearing, to give protection to the good citizens and to curb the miscreant citizens, and if necessary, to kill the murderers and plunderers and persons causing disturbance in society. The king had the right, and he had the might, and he had the training how to properly use and not to misuse. There, in the first canto, this is the third canto, in the first canto, there are two places where Prabhupada says Kali Yuga first showed its influence when the son of the sage, when Srini, the son of the sage, Shamakrishi, misused rabbinical power. He knew what rabbinical power was because he received it from his father, but he did not know how to properly utilize it. And so he improperly utilized it because he didn't have character. He has strength without character. And that showed the sign that Kali Yuga has begun. And that's how Kali Yuga further deteriorates. Where one has intellectual strength or grammatical strength or some kind of capacity like that, it doesn't know how to use it, it misuses it. And brings, it's the instrument through which Kali works to degrade the influence of. So the opposite is qualified brahmanas who know how to properly use what they're given and have a character. They know when to use and how to use and otherwise don't. And then the other passage is where those who are in the position of kings, specifically the personality of Kali, dressed himself up as a king. It was a charade. He wasn't a king, nor was he qualified to be a king, but persons who are unqualified to be kings, assuming the post of kings and doing abominable things, like King Henry VIII or so many others. Without the qualification, then people lose faith in the leader because he's not worthy of that. And then it becomes, below, it becomes anarchy. So the proper target or goal is qualified king and a qualified brahmin. Qualified kings and qualified brahmins. And of the two, it starts with the qualified brahmana. That was the strategy of Srila Prabhupada, to create qualified brahmanas, or first-class men, Prabhupada used the phrase. And Vaishnavas are to be those first-class men. From the first-class men, they can guide, educate, and train, used in theory, qualified kings, or have a qualified king that you're not only the qualified Brahman, but you're a king that can receive the training. That's in the age of coming, that's difficult. The whole thing is difficult. But the principle that can work is a qualified Vaishnava Brahman giving guidance and training to a qualified Vaishnava Kshatriya. That's a good combination. A lot of work in between where we are to achieve that. So, in the purport, Prabhupada is commenting about committing violence. Kshatriyas are allowed to commit violence. By that, he's referring to undesirable elements, curb them. If necessary, kill them. That's violence. But those persons who perpetrate violence, how are they to be checked? By a qualified kshatriya. Not anybody, you know, a self-appointed group of people go and beat up on somebody. But qualified people who are properly trained and disciplined have the skill and know how to use it. So the Sanskrit words are Vadhaya Asatam Asat and Asatam, the impermanent, and those who are here the translation is undesirable. They take shelter of unclean, unwholesome, fallen, degraded activity and practices. Asatam. So they're to be checked by the governing force. So there's a protecting energy that allows one to do that, protecting the innocent and checking the miscreants. The phrase is here, Pavani. Karnava says, the tour you have undertaken, O Lord, is surely intended to protect the virtuous and kill the demons, since you embody the protecting energy of Sri Hari. A qualified king does. An unqualified king has strength, but it's not exactly the protecting energy of the Supreme Lord. It's material capacity and is deployed for ambitious, self-serving purposes. Maybe sometimes in the guise of, you know, for the good of humanity or something. Like this whole thing of, you know, with Syria and what to do. You know, there's no standard, and so it's all over the place. There must be reference to authorized scripture, not just somebody's sense of, you know, here's the line, we can't cross that line, somebody does that, we're going to smack them. Anyway, it's a long way to get to the point where there's scriptural reference as the basis and support for leaders to do things and decide things. So, but there is a protecting energy and it's meant to be deployed according to the instructions of the Supreme Lord. The king or the executive of the state is supposed to possess such energy. In this age, it is very difficult to find such a head of state who is expert in killing the undesirables. They have persons who are expert in killing all kinds of people, but not, you know, according to religious principle. Modern heads of state sit very nicely in their palaces and try without reason to kill innocent persons. This is going on. It doesn't take too much to find it. Examples of it. So our Srimad Bhagavatam is guiding us towards light and away from darkness. And it's certainly a challenge because darkness is abundant and light is not. So to stay fixed on the path of transcendence in the atmosphere that's very toxic is challenging. But shelter in the Bhagavatam can help us move along that path. And at least in terms of our own lives, establish standards of conduct. We're not kings, but we're Vaishnavas. So we should live by our Vaishnava standards, know what they are, and conduct our lives accordingly. According to our capacity. Any discussion?
This is about trying to understand the vision of Srila Prabhupada. And sometimes we hear...
Is this being recorded?
Yes, ma'am.
Where?
It's there.
Okay.
Sometimes we hear that Srila Prabhupada wanted to create qualified Brahmins, and sometimes many devotees they talk about establishing Varnashrama. So, I want to understand that Srila Prabhupada's vision is to create the first class men who are meant to be Brahmanas guiding the society, or trying to see the propensities of different individuals and trying to channelize them and have a well divided social order, and that can, in a combined fashion, work coherently towards pleasing the Supreme.
It's a big topic that doesn't have a lot of clarity. There are some people that say on this, on the one hand, some people say something on the other hand, and there's a lot of sound vibration in between, and there's not a lot of clarity. Over on this side, people say and give quotes from Prabhupada to support, this is for the non-devotees. Varnashram is not required for devotees. It's for the non-devotees. So in order to help the non-devotees, or devotees that are not strict followers, the words that Prabhupada uses, they don't chant their rounds, they don't chant their Gayatris, how can they become purified? They need something. So it's for those that don't properly take shelter of the principles of sadhana bhakti. There's one view like that. So to create Varnashram means a model for people to live by. We need examples of the model for people to live by it, and teachings that accompany it. But it's for them, it's not for us. And over here, there are some that say, well, as far as I'm concerned, I don't consider myself to be beyond the modes of nature and fixed in transcendence. These are like, you know, leading persons and sannyasis and elevated souls. And therefore, until that stage is reached, we also need these things. And don't we find that Prabhupada gave some elements, like sannyas and grihastha and brahmachari, some ashram things? And so, are we not to fill in the picture? So zoom, zoom, off we go. We're not acharyas, but we're like pretending to be. It's like I'm making a commentary here of figuring it out and then whatever, imposing it on or the instructing ideology to other people about something that is needed, although it's not so clear. And then there's then there's all kinds of voices in between. It's an important topic. It requires very deep, thoughtful persons to explore it. And I'm not on any bandwagon on the topic. I see, you know, things that make sense on both sides, and I don't have a lot of clarity, I don't see a lot of clarity. Well, it's important. And it's been like that for maybe 2 decades. The one thing that makes full sense is rural communities establishing such a structure. Like Jayadwaita Maharaj has pointed out. If you want to know what Varnashram is, go to a village in India, you'll see it. There's a textbook, but there it is. The textbook describes it, but there it is. It's natural. It's natural in an agrarian setting, in a village setting where you don't have, you know, millions of people. It's a village setting when you have natural functions for the community within the village to function. And therefore, trying to establish Varnashram specifically in rural communities of devotees makes sense as a beginning point. My thought or support goes to those who have that inspiration, try to do that in rural communities and show a model of how it can work in a rural community first before getting all revved up about something else and going on campaigns and speaking about something that's abstract without example, and how it applies to everybody is also lacking in clarity. Its position within ISKCON. Do it nicely within a rural community first. So you can see it working and go through the steps of getting it to work first. Make a model in an agrarian-based economy. Is there anything else? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You mentioned the sage before talking, he meditated on the super soul, the instructions.
I didn't say meditate on the super soul. Did I say that?
No, you never. He remembered the instructions
that he received from the Lord. Yeah.
Yeah. So regarding this, like, how should we practice before we talk, both in the family or else in the workplace, you know, in a situation that we need to really talk. So what are the qualities that we should really do before we talk in the environment?
First of all, did you hear the class yesterday evening was in response to the question I didn't very nicely answer yesterday?
No, I missed the first half an hour because I ended up in the traffic.
Hear the class, because it was an answer, a proper full answer, or, you know, one answer for 1 hour to your question about how to achieve purity.
I heard from
the public. Okay, so there was an answer to your question. Now, you know, this question is also very broad. Restate it simply. I'm not objecting, I just wanted to say it again simply. State your question again.
How should we talk in terms of a Vaishnava qualities with the family members or in the workplace?
Okay. The preamble to your question was, before Kartamuni spoke, he did something. And what he did was he remembered the instructions of the Lord. What I had said during the class was a Vaishnava quality or trait is before we act, we connect with that which is the source of our wisdom. We submit ourselves. It's like, you know, before the verse in the first canto, before uttering the Srimad Bhagavatam, let me first offer my obeisances unto, or when Shukadeva Goswami speaks, or when a person who's fixed in transcendence is called upon to act, whether it's speaking as a Brahmin or Vaishnava, or whatever it is, the first is take shelter of that which is the source of your wisdom. You connect, and then you act. It's a huge difference than just stimulus response and there's nothing in between. That's devoid of that consciousness, stimulus and response. The active principle in a Vaishnava's life is their shelter. So here's something. And by training, my consciousness goes to that source of shelter before I speak or act or do something. And whatever it is that I speak should be in accordance with what I've heard. And something that will help very much to keep my speech in accord with that which I have heard is the submission to the source from which I have heard. Conscious, that's bhakti. Then I act with devotion. So that's a principle that then, depending upon the circumstance, one speaks according to the circumstance. Sometimes it's with humble persuasion, sometimes it's strongly, sometimes it's whatever is appropriate for the circumstance, not because I got bothered and so I yelled or something, or I just something. It's not when I speak within the family or wherever it is that I'm speaking, I'm representing the disciplic succession, I'm representing Krishna, I'm Krishna's instrument to be of some service in the situation. And one thinks of oneself in that way, as an instrument of Krishna in this situation, and then according to the indications from that source that I've heard of what seemed to be appropriate in different circumstances. And, you know, there's your study of scripture and what is appropriate in different circumstances. And, to some degree, inspiration. Then I speak. And by practicing and practicing and practicing and practicing and practicing and practicing, it just becomes second nature. The position of Krishna consciousness when I act within the family or within whatever the circumstances. The foundational is Krishna consciousness. And something that obviously helps establish our Krishna consciousness is the quality of chanting and hearing. And then applying, and you know, the sense of connection with that source from which we are hearing, and ultimately that source from which we are hearing connects us with Krishna. But the alertness or consciousness of our relationship with Krishna, and then speaking and acting, guided by that wisdom that we received, appropriate for the circumstance. You're done. Yes? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Okay.